Now, I want you all to be satisfied from what you've learned today. It's possibly frustrating that I keep saying, this is the correct technique to solve this problem, and somebody else has documented it. The inventor of the solution has documented it, and I'll link you to that later. I think that is the correct approach for something that has been adequately documented by another person. So I don't want you to feel like I'm not sharing enough secrets with you, right? For things that are actual little bits of code and correct ways to do things, I'm hoping that the next section images will be more up that alley, more up your street, as I believe you say in British. All right. And amazingly, I think I've managed to get my slides back up on Jill's machine. Amazing. Okay, so if there's one thing we learned on our grandpappy's knee, it was that accessibility is all about blind people, and blind people have a problem with images. So we know that obviously those things are true statements that don't deserve any qualification or elucidation whatsoever. Nonetheless, as people working in this field, in our day-to-day lives, we still have problems with images. Images come along all the time, and even though we know the basic techniques on them, getting it right is a bit of a trial. So in your day-to-day work, how many of you are stuck, like, sitting there trying to figure out exactly what to do with particular images, and this comes up a lot? Does that happen to several of you? Everything happens to you, Andy. We know you're polyvalent. Everything happens to Andy. Everything that can happen happens to Andy, right? In your day-to-day lives, you have to deal with images, right? And all of you know that every single IMG element in HTML has to have an alt text. That's fine. All right. Well, can you avoid it completely? I think in some cases you can. Does anyone here still have to deal with spacer GIFs? How about the table layouts people? Does this still come up?
Sometimes.
Ryan, can we have a little Oprah moment here? Tell us about some.
Should I cry?
Tell us about some scenarios in which you still have to use things like spacer GIFs.
Mostly when I just have to nudge an image just a little bit one way, or where I actually have, I hate to say this, buttons that are images, you know, links that are images, and I just have to align them. I obviously inherited this system, and I've got all these spacers, and I'm stuck with them. So I just have to learn to love them. You know, putting stuff within tables, just nudging all this stuff along when they haven't done the layout correctly.
And you can't add things like classes or IDs so you can style them with CSS and nudge them with CSS.
I'm starting to do that, but some that I've inherited, it would take so much time because they've used them practically in every single line. I've inherited from people who design for paper. Mm. So all I can think of is to put a little bit of white space somewhere, and they just use it hundreds of times on each page.
Right, and in a case like that, since you only have one life to live,
exactly,
possibly just copying and pasting more of that same image in there. Well, by the way, have you considered just using your spacer GIF but changing the width attribute on it? So suddenly it's a 1x1 pixel transparent GIF, but you size it to be 30 pixels wide?
Yes, that's what I tend to do when I have to. I don't just keep adding them, which is what they did. I strip them out and change the size
just
of them.
So that's
either that or jump off a building.
Good pragmatic technique here from the audience. Like, we really are sharing secrets of web accessibility in that Oprah style. So not many of you have to deal with spacer GIFs, but you know, all of you know that they are alt equals double quote, right? Or in HTML, single quotes are legal, and you can use them in British English. So alt equals single quote is what you need. Nothing in between it, no space. A null alt text or an empty alt text. Of course you all know that. Are there other cases when you can use null alt text? The big one, and this is controversial, but the people who think it's controversial are wrong, so you can just disregard them, is if you have an image and immediately adjacent text that adequately explains the image. The biggest example is biographical pages or even some photo galleries. If you have a list of your company's board of directors and it's just headshots with names, and of course they're all guys in suits inevitably, right? You don't have to duplicate the person's name in the alt text, because then the non-visual user will hear the name twice. It's completely stupid. So you just do image alt equals null, and then the person's name. You can have intervening markup. It can be, you know, if you have to have another table cell, if you have to float it in a span or a div, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's quite clear that this is the, as long as the reading order is the same for the images and the immediately adjacent text. Another example is a photo caption on a newspaper. The photos we saw on the Globe and Mail site, unless there's something unusual, and boy, it would have to be pretty unusual, the written photo caption is the functionally equivalent to the alt text, so you use a null alt text in that case. Another example would be if you have, say, a small site or a personal weblog where the heading completely describes the photo, and the photo is the only text, is the only content, I should say. So if you're just putting up a photo just to put up a photo, and the headline completely describes it, you're going to read the headline because it's an H1 or an H2 or an H3, and that will run in sequence, and you don't need alt text for that. It's also a null alt text. So there are some applications for this hack for non-compliant sites that you can use in compliant sites. Has anyone ever had some other examples where they've used a null alt text other than the cases I just described?
Sorry, yeah, decorative images, purely decorative, so visually, you don't really need to describe them, so we'll just keep that null as well.
And what would be an example of that in your view?
Well, yeah, if we're not using CSS with background images, but we have to have it in line, you know, a border or
a banner.
Border or banner, yes, those things do come up. Even on a CSS layer, there's some things you have to hack with an IMG. Does the fellow next to you have something, or are you scratching your head? Scalp health is an important part of web accessibility. All right. Now, the writing of the alt text is something that people find too difficult. It's because of a failure to explain what an alt text is. It's implicit in the specification, but it's been poorly explained, especially in Way. Read the techniques for Way. They're just terrible. They do not understand. They don't get to the point. So, spec calls it an alternate text, hence alt. That means if it's an alternate, you get to see one thing or the other. Hence, it's the image or the text, which means that alt text is actually a replacement text. If you have the mental image of your alt text as a replacement for the text, remove the image and put the text in its place, then that will guide your writing of the alt text. First of all, you almost never would have to put the word photo, or if it's a photograph, you never have to put the word photo in there because you know it's a photo. It's not a question of describing the function of the image, which is what the Way guidelines tell you to do. You're not describing the image. We're not talking about long descriptions. We're not talking about audio description of cinema or television. It is a replacement for the image. Imagine pulling the picture out and putting the words back in. Now, for some cases, like a lot of the photos on my personal weblog are photos of type samples or strange, RSNs of lorries, the sort of thing that I like to photograph. Why would I bother photographing people? It's been done. So in cases like that, then I have to sort of get into a big song and dance as to what the photo is actually showing. In a typical case, though, it's just, you know, the person's name, John Smith. If it's a headshot, if it's a photo of the destruction of New Orleans, it's streets are piled almost up to rooftops with water. It's a replacement text. It will be simpler for you to write alt text for even semi-complicated images if you think about it that way. Now, another kind of decorative image that you get a lot are branding images typically in page headers. Actually, the RNID site is an example of that. And we could actually have a look and see what they're doing on that. Oh, we switch browsers. Now we're using Firefox. All right, so this sort of thing, the top image here, this shows a young boy with a hearing aid. This kind of banner image is a good borderline case. It's not just shiny, happy people in advertising. you know, very often, you know, multicultural office workers all sitting around the conference table, one of every possible race in the society, and 50-50 male, female, right, being all happy. Those sorts of things have no content whatsoever, and those would be a null alt text. In a case like this, since this young boy is wearing hearing aid, then it could be alt equals, smiling boy has a hearing aid in left ear, smiling young boy with hearing aid smiles at us. Take your pick. It could be any one of those things. But a more commercial case is you have a bit of color branding or just some graphic design treatments done in Illustrator or Photoshop at the top of the page. Those have no content. They have intent. They have effect. They are part of the graphic design of the page, which is not to be belittled. Graphic design is an important part of the web. But if you're sitting there thinking about it as a replacement text, what is the replacement of these beautiful background colors? Well, there isn't a replacement, right? So you want to eliminate those. And the best way is, as that person said, the CSS background images. Who here is familiar with the concept of using a background image in CSS? Have you ever tried that before? Is there anyone for whom it's totally new? Feel free. Oh, hi, Marcia. it's all right. You can assign a background image to virtually anything that can take a background. For example, any kind of div or span or many kind of elements that can have foregrounds and backgrounds. You just put URL brackets and then the URL of the image that you want as the background. The advantage of this is that it disappears from the HTML. It is no longer part of HTML. It's merely presentational. It's part of the style sheet. You're calling it from the CSS. For something that's there purely to make the page look nice, that's the correct method. You then obviate the necessity of writing an alt text because it isn't even an HTML. It's not, let alone being an image element. I encourage the use of the background property wherever possible. There is an issue that some really busy backgrounds, especially on some of the more youth-oriented sites or cutesy sites, if you're selling cutesy things, you know, like the Japanese schoolgirl watch kind of cuteness where everything has polka dots and this sort of thing. Really busy backgrounds of this sort are not really the kind of thing you want to put text over. I think Mike Stenhouse is in the room. Do not remove.co.uk. That would be Mike right here. Yes. Why don't we put it up here? He has a good method on this. Am I the only one who pronounces .co.uk as just co-oc? Do not remove co-oc, BBC co-oc. The worst one is type co-oc, like the font shop. Type.co.uk, type co-oc. All right, so Mike has a busy background image of a rusted-out car. Rusted-out the way, you know, WCAG 1.0 is. This is the WCAG 1.0 mobile, right? Is it old Peugeot or something? I don't know what it is. And to make the type on top of it readable, he actually uses a background color of white. So it's not you're not exactly typesetting the letters right on top of the background image. That would be an unusual case. A lot of your high design sites in that sort of cute market segment might have that happen. In the typical run of your day's work as a designer, you won't see it. Just keep that in mind. You could do the same sort of thing on things like list items. If you wanted a custom list bullet because it's, you know, the sign-up page for your brand-new service, and you want to tell people why, give people the five reasons why they should sign up, and you want a really sexy big orange star or something as your list bullet, well, you can do that as using the list style property of CSS. It's actually list-style-image. You can just use whatever image you want, or you can do what Doug Bowman of Stop Design does and just have list style type none, list indication at all, but use a background image that's moved over a bit. Bowman has some documentation on his site, which I'll link to, explaining why he thinks that's slightly better, especially when you bump the font sizes up. So if your corporate branding requires this really nice graphic presentation, you don't have to sacrifice structure. In fact, you can do something really devious. You can add list style type background images, list style type or background images to any kind of list, right? So people would usually do that with an unordered list because after years of looking at the web, you think of unordered lists as bullets, right? But you can actually do that to ordered lists as well. And the screen reader user might hear them as 1, 2, 3. The visual user might just see the big you know, kooky J-pop kind of star. So feel free to use that kind of thing. It enhances the visual appeal of the page. It's perfectly structural. It's separating content from presentation. And it's a kind of advanced technique that all the standards compliant browsers, even crappy ones like IE on Windows, work just fine with. So go to town on that. Now, does anyone get confused about alts and titles and tooltips? Perhaps confused is the wrong word. Does anyone get annoyed by that? Like, I'm telling you right now, I get annoyed by that. This is another thing I'm not going to change in my book that I regret writing. And I've stopped doing it. And if you look at my pages from 1999 to 2002, I had this all over the place, and it's embarrassing. And I'm waiting for someone to find that, put it on their personal weblog. And, you know, when you Google me, you find that, how I'm a hypocrite for doing this, right? My suggestion was to deal with the inadequacies of IE on Windows, which treats alt text as a tooltip, which it isn't, right? By spec, alternate text is a replacement for the image. You can't have both at once. So if you hover over an image in Internet Explorer on Windows, a tooltip pops up with the alt text, which is rather distracting for people. In fact, I have had people write in, complain to me about my site, that they get this distracting tooltip whenever they go over images. I have to explain to them, well, I'm sorry, you're using a bad browser. To turn that off, you have to use title equals single space, double quote, space, double quote, which is itself not even necessarily reliable. Sometimes some versions of Internet Explorer, especially version 5, will actually hover a space character. They'll hover a little yellow space character over your image. So my 2002 era advice was, if you want to be really picky, just duplicate the alt text in the title. So you're actually producing the same effect that I was ostensibly trying to avoid in IE for Windows. But I had this brilliant idea that so you, the developer, could tell which one you're looking at, just put the alt text normal, but put the title text inside brackets. So this was a really good idea of mine. And it's committed, you know, in print forever. That book will be around forever until the Earth crashes into the sun, and that's my bad advice in there. So don't do that. But what you can do with the title attribute is to add advisory information, supplementary information, things that are nice to have, right? The trick is, on commercial sites, this almost never comes up. This tends to be the sort of thing you find on personal weblogs and that sort of thing. One thing you must not do, and I'm really quite hardcore about this, is if for some reason your image is also a link, and that link is going to open in a new window, and you have a really good reason for that, you're all familiar with the usability issues around that, do not put the notification that the link will open in a new window in the title. That is because most people won't ever see it. If you have something with a title attribute, you have to, even in a visual browser, you have to sit there and wait a second for it to come up. So let's look at my really bad accessibility site. Perfectly accessible, meets all the guidelines, embarrassing as hell. Now, we should get a title on that. There we go, Joe Clark Media Access. Amazingly enough, it's essentially the alt text replicated with brackets around it. But you have to sit there and hover for a second to see it. Then you have to read it. If you're visually impaired and you need big fonts, you don't get them. There is a way on Windows to change tooltip size. I've never seen it. I've tried it many times on different computers. I've never seen it work on a website. So let's imagine you're a non-disabled person and you're trying to inform them that your link is going to open in a new window. They have to know to hover over it, then read it. If you're a visually impaired person, you probably can't read it in the first place. If you're a screen reader user, and this is very confusing to screen reader users when windows pop open, they would because of deficiencies in the way these things are set up, they would have to have title attribute reading mode on. And of course, also because of these deficiencies, they probably wouldn't hear your alt text because it's one or the other. So for essential information like, I'm going to disrupt your browsing experience by opening a new window, hold on, don't put it in the title attribute because it's too easy to miss. Even though there's wide support for titles on virtually everything, it's too easy to miss. Question from Patrick?
Yeah, also, as far as I know anyway, if you're using the keyboard to go, say, from one link to the other, there, I don't think there is a way to actually get a title to show up with purely keyboard navigation.
I've never found such a thing. You're right.
So if you put any information there, even for a sighted user that uses, I don't know, keyboard switch access, whatever, they wouldn't get it.
Yeah, title is a fun thing, nice to have, and I use it. You can put little fun things in it. Just don't expect everyone to be able to read it, and in some cases they will simply miss it completely. So budget for that. Photo galleries. I mentioned those before. A lot of even commercial sites that have a community component have photo galleries in them. Does anyone here run a site that has a photo gallery page or image gallery page? Oh, that's interesting. So let's hear about those. Can we talk to these chaps here? Yes, you're on. So what's your application?
The site that runs it is Warwick Art Centre, for all their press images that they send out. It uses PHP Gallery, which resizes it all for their needs.
What sort of trouble do you have with that from standards or accessibility?
A lot. We decided not to recode the templates for that application's output due to time restraints and among other things.
This is one of those cases where you just have to feel ashamed.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. I know, right. How about your neighbor there? What's your thing?
I just think, whilst I use gallery tools and PHP things for my personal sites, at MTV we tend to hand code things, so there aren't any particular accessibility issues with those. It tends to be just cycling through 10 or 20 images from an after-show party or something like that.
Ah, all right. Slideshows are a different application of photo gallery, but you're right on that. Now, didn't Mr. Yahoo over here have one too? If I could read your name tag, which I probably couldn't because it's an aerial, but that I'd know you by name.
Our biggest problem is all of our photos come from providers and get entered in automatically. So the only kind of caption that we have for half of them is something like image 5063B _ and some random tag. So and obviously we don't employ people to go through and caption every image.
Well, tag or describe. Not exactly the same thing. The problem with the photo galleries, which as we see are real world things, they're not just it's not just for Flickr anymore. Is that there are two problems. How do you deal with it semantically? The attempts at doing this are quasi satisfactory. My friend Noel Jackson, who's 21, who put this together when he was 19. Photostack.org. Oh, thanks for taking it off. Great. Crashes it. Look at this. I can't even show it to you. Anyway, this is great. Well, back in the day, Photostack.org was the only standards compliant method of doing this. Let's check his markup. It's debatable how you can mark up an image gallery that doesn't have captions, which are words below the image or alongside the image that everyone's expected to read. That's in dispute. There are ways to do that in CSS. You could certainly use any of several kinds of lists. The problem is, how do you deal with the fact that you only want four or five at a time? And if you change the screen dimensions, how do you deal with that? No one has a satisfactory solution to that. In fact, if you two ever get around to fixing your templates, please do drop me a line and we can try to do it correctly, then use that as a showcase for other people. Just one sec, hold on. So we see that Noel, let me read this to you. Yeah, Noel's using a div and an unordered list. And with alt text, sample image from gallery. Thank you, Noel. Right. The closest thing we had to a standards compliant method of putting a photo gallery together was photostack.org. All right. And that's it now. Matt Moenweg's site does the same thing, but he custom wrote his own thing in PHP. He's the lead developer of WordPress. No one has a good solution, just from a standards perspective. If you have a photo gallery site that does have captions, I argue that the best method is to use a definition list where the DT, the term being defined as the photograph, and the DD, the description, is the caption. You have the same issues of how to lay them out. There have been some attempts to do that, but I don't know how successful they are. The bigger problem from accessibility, of course, is the fact that someone has to sit there and put in an alt text. And that really is true. Someone has to sit there and put in an alt text for all of them if you want to be compliant. This is not something I'm going to suggest a fudge on. I'm going to suggest that you have to sit there and go through all of them. Someone actually does have to be hired to sit there and write alt text if you want to have a standards compliant site. Remember I said the thing to avoid was tag soup? Having an image without an alt text is not tag soup. That's just an error. That's just a deficiency. I'm not saying you can get away with that. I'm saying if you try to get away with that, we're all going to get upset. There's a reason why the conventional wisdom of accessibility is alt text. It's because it's very important. So you can't overlook it. This doesn't mean that you have enough money in your budget to hire someone to come and do that. Doesn't mean you're actually going to be able to do what I'm asking you to do. Nonetheless, I just want you all to understand that that it's a necessity. It's not something you can set aside. So let's see what Matt Mullenweg is doing. He has a div and a link and a blank alt for all his pictures, even though the pictures clearly require an alt text, and the type next to them does not adequately explain it. So the second picture is a picture of a building in a blue sky as a heading of Flight and Dallas, whatever the hell that means, and a whole bunch of text on when it was changed and viewed. So Matt, who's a very standards compliant kind of guy, is still doing it wrong. No one has a really good solution to this. And what about Flickr? Flickr's own Cal Henderson was at the previous workshop. And he's explained before that they're doing more things on Flickr with DHTML than with Flash. There are a lot of things that can be done just with little bits of JavaScript and HTML. But at least a year and a half or 2 years ago, on an instant message with Stuart Butterfield of Flickr, I was like, well, why is it that we can't actually put an alt text in for our own images? And his response, paraphrased, was, well, we already have three description fields for the image. Are you saying we need a fourth one? And I said, yes, I am saying that. And that was not a priority for his development. Flickr's a wonderful service. I use it. I found I've had to adapt my methods of making images accessible for Flickr, even based on the intended use case of sighted people coming to that site rather than blind people. But in a case like that, if you're stuck with like a bad PHP template, or even have a very good site like Flickr and they just don't want to change it, you can just hack it and pretend that one of the description fields around it is the alt text, for example. So the resulting HTML on your bad system may be alt equals file name, as in the Yahoo case, but the surrounding text would function as an alt text. This is rather unpleasant, and we don't like to have to do that. But at least your intent, the intent is there, and you're trying to describe the photograph that you can't provide a replacement text for. So if you look at a lot of my photos on Flickr, a lot of them, especially the photos of typefaces in the wild, I use the description field for that. For the photos of the RS end of lorries, I just have the headline deal with the RS end of the lorry, right? Back of truck, but I had to translate that into British for you. It's a difficult problem. If any of you have the chance to recode that, please let me know. We can try to make a test case about it. All right. Now, the other hot topic in images is image replacement. Who on their live sites today is using any kind of image replacement technique? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's all that row there. So you're the elite users. So we know about you. We know about you. So why don't we talk to you? Why don't you tell us about, yes, you, what you're using it for?
Right. We just built a new site to show the Maritime Museum collections, and we tried wherever possible just to use sort of standard valid HTML and CSS for as much presentation as possible. So things like the navigation buttons are all done using image replacement, and hopefully it works on as many browsers as possible.
The navigation is done using image replacement?
Yeah.
What's your URL? Let's look.
www.nmmacuk.com/.
Hold on. Sorry. What?
NMM, National Maritime Museum.
NationalMaritimeMuseum.ac.uk. Yep.
/collections.
Yeah, NMM. Difficult to say, isn't it? Which parts of this are replaced images?
The where it says home, browse the collections, my collection, about collections online at the top. I think also the banner as well.
Which method are you using?
I can't remember now.
It's probably not the newer version of Cipher, right? Because if you resize and reload, the type's supposed to get bigger in the new version of Cipher.
It's not that.
For that, I don't see why you're not just using image elements. That might just be me, but if you have to have graphical buttons like that, first of all, why are you using graphical buttons for something that's obviously Arial or Helvetica? No, it's Arial, actually. That I wouldn't say that's a justifiable use of it. By the way, your search tends to obliterate your words. That will happen. Don't worry about it. You can fix that with a Zoom layout. What about the Yahoo case? What do you use it for? Any number of things, but what do you use it for?
Mostly at the moment we use it to replace the masthead image. So it's actually text that says Yahoo, mobile, UK and Ireland, rather than just an image with normal text.
So would that be mobile Yahoo Kowak?
I don't know if that's actually live yet, though.
Oops! All right, let's do Yahoo Kowak and just see what we can find. I mean, that's probably just an image, right? IMG?
In that case, yes.
In that case, yes. What would be another one that is probably live? Well, there's mobile. But that might not be the redesigned, new, fancy one, right? That's probably just the old style, which is fine, by the way. It's perfectly fine. The trick is actually coming up with a usage for image replacement that is justifiable. It may shock you to learn that I don't have any objection to using image replacement to make your page look nice. I'm all in favor of better graphic design typography as long as we don't compromise accessibility, and vice versa. I'm all in favor of more accessibility as long as we don't compromise typography and visual appeal. People do forget that a lot of users with disabilities can see perfectly well. Deaf people, mobility impaired people, this sort of thing, right? A lot of people with learning disabilities and so on, they have perfectly good vision and they like nice looking sites. So a nice looking site is an accessible site to those users with disabilities. And of course there are non-disabled people who just like things to look pretty. That's fine. The good thing about Cipher is it improves headline typography, right? With headline typography, you have lots more pixels to play with, right? If you're using 14 to 18 or 20 point fonts, even if you weren't using image replacement, you have enough pixels so that your stem widths are no longer one pixel. Serifs can actually be real serifs instead of little right angles. There are some advantages to that. People are not realistically using image replacement for body copy, which is, 6 to 11 point text, because there just aren't enough pixels there and it's completely pointless. There's nothing wrong with using the image replacement techniques to make a really good headline, because a lot of them have been very well crafted and reasonably tested to be semantic. They just use ordinary H1 elements with a bit of, or heading elements with a bit of CSS, and have lots of fallback mechanisms. If you have no JavaScript, it doesn't happen. If you have no CSS, you see the heading text. If you need to resize your fonts, unfortunately, you have to bump up the font size of your page and then reload the page. Perhaps that deficiency will be corrected in the fullness of time. The new version, Thierry image replacement, or image placement, I should say, just uses an ordinary image element with a couple of other bits of markup. There's nothing wrong with using those. No one's been able to demonstrate that they're not readable in screen readers or with adaptive technologies. They resize if you do this extra trick. They would be compatible with a Zoom layout, by the way. If you wanted to use your same heading typography but with reversed fonts, that's a pretty easy thing to manufacture. This is an example of standardistas who are interested in good graphic design putting those two things together to make something that works pretty well. Now, this is a semi-radical thing to support, right? This, in theory, all the accessibilitystas are supposed to be opposed to image replacement, because the kind of people who would use image replacement are the people who think the web is about visual presentation, or the web is like print, or they want everything to be flash, because a lot of image replacement techniques use flash. So there's a sort of guilt by association. If you like this, it must be for the wrong reasons, right? Well, that's fine. You could be all those things. You could be the, you know, not our kind of people and still use the really good image replacement techniques, and it'd still work just fine because the techniques are pretty good. So after I've just made this sort of radical endorsement, is there anyone, I'm looking at you, Patrick, is there anyone in the audience who thinks they stink and they're oversold and their claim benefits are bogus and they actually shouldn't be used? I'm perfectly willing to hear that. Let's hear it, not from Jeremy Keefe. Let's try you first.
Well, I don't think they're necessarily that bad, but a couple of problems with them. First of all, it's text embedded within an image, so for a screen magnifier user, it may appear quite blurry and pixelated.
Oh, but see, that's a myth. I've done tests on that. All right, you hear this a lot. The typical case is image text in an ordinary GIF or JPEG, right? And the claim is you can't blow that up. Well, of course, you can blow that up. It's just that typical browsers, even Firefox, don't blow images up automatically. Even Opera blows images up automatically. Screen magnifier programs like ZoomText, which I've actually used, are perfectly happy to blow the picture up. So if the issue is it gets all pixelated and you can't see it, that hasn't been my experience, and I've looked at a lot of them. Also, implicitly, the comparison is your live text, your actual encoded text on the screen, will blow up and be perfectly pristine. No, that isn't the reality with the current adaptive technologies. On Zoom text, up to 8 times magnification, it does. Hold on, I'm just giving you more information here. I'm not disputing your point. On 8 times magnification on Zoom text, it actually just keeps making bigger bitmaps from the outline font, the TrueType font underneath that. Above that, it starts pixelating that font. It takes the result of that blowing up and blows it up further. So even your live text ends up pixelated at those sizes. But more importantly, at those sizes, the pixels are literally this big. The pixels are like over a centimeter square. So everything looks pixelated, and there is an anti-aliasing at those sizes. And I wish my friends at Microsoft Advanced Reading Technologies would fix that. I told them about it, but it's not on their priority list. So if the complaint is you blow it up and it looks blurry, that hasn't been my experience, and it's no blurrier than the really big live text. And in the CIFR case, you can just, if they'd fix the problem having to reload it to get the bigger size, then that would be resolved as well, because it would be at the full resolution of the desired type size.
Yeah, we've had kind of, I guess, different experiences then.
Tell me, what happened?
In our experience generally with testing with screen magnifier users, one of the biggest complaints is text embedded within images becomes much harder to read than regular text.
I wouldn't do it very often. Like the page header in my accessibility site is an image, and I figured that was all right, especially since it's only 4 words and the alt text is perfectly adequate to describe it. It's true it's overused. That's why some of the advantages of the existing image replacement techniques overcome that, right? Also, you find that I've read some of the studies on this, and I've also looked at the sites they were talking about. Like pre-redesigned BBC was one of them. They did some user testing, right? And they had a really bad site. The site was just bad, right? Bad in any number of ways. Bad markup. It looked ugly. Information architecture was off. The whole thing was terrible. And like entire broad categories of navigation on the right-hand side, always a difficult part of the screen for magnifier users, were images, but they were too small. They were like 12 pixel high fonts that they made into images. Well, what's the point? You can't even tell what font it is at that point. So they had a badly designed site in the first place. It would be interesting if we took those same users to a site where they judiciously used images of text, like only in the page header graphic, or only in very unusual, exceptional places, like one or two headlines on the right-hand side of the page or something, and see if they really cared just that much. There are many cases where it's still, everything you've just said is still true, but I think there's some other facts that are coming to be known that reduce that. I don't use pictures of text very often, but only like now and then. Like on the book chapters on there, the titles of each book chapter are a picture of the font known as Shire Types by Jeremy Tankard up in Warwickshire. That's it. I figure that was, okay.
Well, my second thing then.
Yes.
The second one is that obviously users on a dial-up connection, which is still more than half the population, may decide to turn images off to speed up the download time, and then they get nothing.
And that's why God gave us alt text. And if
you're a background image.
Ah, well, you use only background CSS backgrounds only for non-essential images because they disappear, right? They become purely presentational.
No, we're talking about the image replacement here.
In your case, you're discussing just a picture of text, like an ordinary GIF that has words in it. And for image replacement, if they have images turned off, that use case is covered in Cipher, if I'm not mistaken. That works. You're right, though. If you have images turned off, you have to have the alt text, which is another thing. If you find these really bad sites that have like a full paragraph, like all the details of the contest, enter today to win either a Mercedes SLK Roadster or a smart convertible. Details in your visa statement. That's too much text to put in a little thing, and then your alt text becomes that big, and a typical browser will just truncate the alt text to fit the size of the image. But Firefox and Mozilla intelligently never try to do that. They don't even bother sizing the box for the non-existent image. So you've given a valid use case where you shouldn't do that sort of thing for extensive text. And now we hear from Jeremy Keith.
I guess I was thinking about the case, not so much. Well, just kind of what you're saying about judiciously. I think a lot of people just go overboard with the text. For images, when it wouldn't really make that much difference if we were using,
no.
You know,
live text.
Exactly, just things like that. Judiciously, I think it's okay for some of the reasons you mentioned. I mean, I use it on my site just for the logo, and the reason for that is kind of what you were saying about Zoom layouts. I have a style switcher for different styles, so the anti-aliasing has got to fit the different background colors. So in that one case, I'm doing it from a style sheet. I'm using some kind of image replacement technique that I can't even remember now which one I'm using. It could possibly even be display none. But then call a halt. And then, you know, for every other headline or every other thing on the page, you know, it's usually going to be okay to, you know, not necessarily have the corporate font for everything. You know, I've been in that situation where they demand, oh, it's got to be in this font for, you know, and people just go crazy, I think.
Yeah, and then you explain to them that, well, this is not actually how the web works. I'm terribly sorry. And you can do a little demonstration to them. Well, all right, we did this mock-up, doing it your way. But you very cleverly bring them in a mock-up where you knock the font size down 5% and you put your screen resolution at the max, so the fonts are actually too small. All the live text is too small. And then you pretend that's a mistake. Oh darn. I hate when this happens. Sorry, let me just boost the text up there. And you bump the text up 2 or 3 sizes so they can see it on the projector, and it looks fine, and you fixed your layout so that won't kill it. Oh, then they notice that all the pictures of text are too small. Oh, darn. Well, that's one of the drawbacks of these pictures of text. Oh, by the way, we had to put in 3 more billable hours just to do those. And when you change them, we're going to have to do this. Someone will have to do that again, and if you have to translate them, we have to make an entirely different layout because the German and the French are going to be twice as long. So, yeah, you do that. You sort of... Whenever you have problems with clients, like you cleverly just put it in sideways. Right? You just put a sideways thing. You use psychological, use psyops, like you use psychological warfare on them, right? All right, anyone else on image replacement? This is another one of those things where I'm just going to point you to all the documentation. Andy Budd.
I was just going to say that there is an image replacement technique that works with the images off CSS on scenario that you mentioned. I can't remember which one it's called. It could be Leary language. Guild 11, yeah. So there is a image replacement technique that works in that scenario.
This would typically be for a high design site with it might have editorial content like the Globe and Mail newspaper, but it simply has a lot of headlines. It seems that has a lot of display type as opposed to body copy. And it's fine. Not all your clients will be like that, especially in the academic and government sectors. Few, if any, will care. But for the more commercial sites, and we want standards and accessibility to infiltrate commercial sites, if they insist on doing that, then you can use one of those techniques. And that could actually be a selling point in the meeting, you know. We're using this brand spanking new technique that's been tested on a million different browsers and works for nearly everyone. And you don't have to tell them about images off CSS on or any of these other details. You just impress the client in that those two sentences that you've done your homework and it works fine, right? Now, that's all I had planned for images, but I'm sure you have other questions. Like, does anyone actually give a damn about long descriptions anymore? at all ever. And yes, here we go.
Now, I had this trouble on a site I was helping out with. It was a brochureware site. They were trying to sell clothes, and they were using the images to sell the clothes. And it was...
Oh, you're the one with you're the one with the catalog question, right? That was on your website, wasn't it?
Yeah, that, yes. That'd be me.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I would have forgotten. I would love to do a catalog site. If any of you ever does that, find some money in the budget to hire me, please. I'm desperate to do that. I don't know the solution on that. I find that I shop online at places like L.L. Bean. These are my L.L. Bean linen pants, by the way, from the state of Maine, although made in Malaysia. In any event, I look at their website, and the code is horrid, and so many things are wrong about it, but it sure is easy to run. You know, they've done user testing. It's just no problem. Just zoom right through it if you're a non-disabled user, right? And I look at it, and a lot of them have widgets to change the color, right? So they'll show you the shirt, and you can just hit the button on the name of the color, and the image will change, tick, 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 with a little bit of JavaScript, right? Or they'll let you do a mix and match, or a comparison, I should say. They'll have one outfit on the left and another one on the right, and you can dial up which one of those you want to compare. I don't know how to make those things accessible. But the bigger problem is, what if you just have, there's only one kind of product, doesn't come in three variations. There's one variation of this. Is this a case of alt equals null because the surrounding text adequately describes the image, or is it not? I don't know. I think in a case like that, it mostly would be. But in the previous case where it's the same shirt with different colors, I don't know how to do that correctly to indicate that. Or if it's a shirt with different patterns. Patterns are kind of important, especially to blind people who certainly all know how to dress and they tag their clothes so they can dress properly in the morning. But this getting, you know, not mismatching your patterns is actually quite important to blind people because it's very embarrassing to them. So knowing what the pattern looks like is an important thing to do, especially on an e-commerce site when you're going to go buy it. I don't know how to do that. I wish someone would try making a really good, apparel e-commerce site that did that. So if any of you gets a contract on that, please drop me a line, because I'd love to do that properly or figure out a way to do it properly. What was the exact problem you had, though, Mike?
The design didn't allow for sensible descriptions to go with the images in line.
Even surrounding it in any?
Even surrounding it. The design came down from an ad agency and was handed down to a web agency to implement it. And I was consulting for them on how to make it accessible. And I was handing my stuff up to the web agency, who'd hand it back up to the ad agency, who'd decide that either it compromised the design or it's outside the budget or...
Or they didn't like it that day.
Or they just didn't fancy it, yeah.
So where is the on the screen, where is the picture, where is the description? Are they miles away from each other or what?
As it ended, I don't think there was a description.
They had no words describing the product. It was just picture.
No, it was pictures of models with the clothes in question and a color selector underneath. And
I don't know how to
think items of clothing and the colors they were available in.
Oh, the items and colors, that's fixable. But the images, is I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, well, I told them they had to have pages with the photo describing it, with the added bonus that you'd get search engine
rankings on that.
Spiderable descriptions of your clothes, so they'd turn up on search engines and in the site search as well.
Sure, and you wouldn't even need a long desk for that. You could use the JavaScript show and hide. And the copy could always be there. It wouldn't be display none, but it would just be show and hide.
Yeah, I think we were just going to link the image to this separate page, which would have your description and your image. And that would be what people would find if they came in through a search engine. So nothing confusing, just straight ahead picture of your clothing.
You can do that.
What it does. But they decided not to.
Because of the reasons you just mentioned, yes. The thing about long desk is it is actually a great idea. However, it's misunderstood, especially by by the Web Accessibility Initiative, who just don't have real world knowledge of the web. The things that are most amenable to a long description are things that are least amenable to encapsulation in words, and these are things like scatter plots on scientific diagrams, even moderately complex charts and graphs output by competent users of Excel as opposed to incompetent users of Excel. Moderately complex charts and graphs, even for financial or business dealings, have a lot of information in there that is specifically put in this graphical format because it's easier for human beings to understand. So Wei's contention is that you can always take a chart or a graph or a scatter plot from a scientific experiment and turn that back into words. Well, no. Your scientific experiment may have 200 subjects, and it's a longitudinal study over 10 years, and your plot may have 5,000 data points that are on a log scale that are condensed into 40 or 50 different dots with lines through them and error bars. The reason why we use those complicated graphing techniques is because we can't understand the base numbers and we can't put it into words. We might be able to summarize the main finding of the study, but if we wanted to do only that, we wouldn't publish the graph. We publish the graph so people can look in detail at what the age 18 to 34 cohort did as opposed to just the whole trend. And you can't turn that back into words unless you want to sit there all day writing many paragraphs that are nonetheless your interpretation, and you'll miss some things that the sighted user can see from the graph. So it is a case like this that is most amenable to long descriptions. A case that is less problematic is art galleries, because there are a lot of works of art that can actually be adequately described in several sentences or paragraphs, even immortal masterpieces of conceptual art, like Picasso's Guernica, can actually be described in words. This isn't hypothetical. There are museum sites that do this already. A lot of the U.S. museum sites, because they get federal funding, have to comply with 508. Also, they just want to be accessible. And all the museum website conferences, and there are like two a year in the United States, have tracks about accessibility. So they know how to write a paragraph or two on their visual artworks. Also, there's the entire practice of audio description of museums. At many museums around the world, even in countries like Spain, you can pick up a little tape recorder. Now these days they're MP3 players. That's custom made for the blind visitor, and you walk through the museum and press the button at the right times, and it gives you an audio description explaining the appearance of the painting, sculpture, or the other visual artwork. So in that case, it works just fine. In the former case of charts, graphs, scientific materials, doesn't work very well at all. And it's possibly better to just ignore the long description HTML and just put it as live text. I certainly agree with Jim Thatcher down in Austin about that. It was a good idea, but it's difficult to implement and in many cases impossible. And question from Andy Budd.
I was just wondering if there are any assistive devices that do support Longdesk or user agents, and what you thought of the recommended equivalent D-Link.
Oh, D-Link is a disaster. Mozilla supports long description. You have to right-click on it, which is, of course, not easy for the visually impaired person to do. And there's a view description item on the contextual menu. The old browser on Macintosh, iCab, supports long description. JAWS 5 and later can be commanded to be put into a mode that tells you that the long description is there, and then you can hit another key to read it, which almost never happens. I don't think WindowEyes understands long description. I believe IBM Homepage Reader version 3 does. Firefox only understands long descriptions natively with someone's extension from, I think it's from PH Lauka over there. The support is poor. It's not a difficult thing to support. There's no excuse for that. It's very easy to support all the attributes of the image element in the HTML spec. So I think the lack of support is bogus. It's bizarre on Firefox, which is the successor to Mozilla. They could have just imported the code. That's completely stupid as far as I'm concerned. Now, the problem with the D-Link, which was innocently proposed by Jeff Fried down at WGBH back in the day, was to overcome the user agent inability to read the description. So you actually you'd put a D and a period, and that would be a hyperlink to the long description. You could still use long description; they could both point to the same place because they're actually hrefs, right? They're links to other files. The problem, of course, is it clutters up your layout. You don't want to have these little Ds floating around, especially if your images are mostly the same as the same colors of the background. In other words, on a typical site, if your images have white backgrounds themselves, all of a sudden you have these Ds floating around them. I don't know where you put them in the tab order. The only way to associate them with one image or another, if you have more than one on a page, is to use the title attribute, which is a problem because it's hard to read if you're blind, because the user agents are so poor at it. And it's just the wrong idea in the first place. You're compensating for something that's in the HTML spec. I really don't approve of that in any respect. It had the small other disadvantage of encouraging people to misapply long descriptions to images that don't need a long description. You know, you can put a couple of sentences in your alt text, and that's fine. You know, life goes on. Your alt text doesn't have to be 5 or 6 words. If it takes 2 sentences to replace your text in words, then do that. Fortunately, that never caught on. Fortunately, the only people who ever used that were people running demonstration sites of what to do with that case, right? So that does not really exist in the wild, and maybe it'll come to be extinct someday. I don't know. Other questions on images? And while we're here, if not, we have the Q&A this afternoon, and you can think if anything comes up, just say so. Whatever. List bullets, image replacement, tables. All right. Apart from tables for layout, who here has to wrestle with real tables, data tables? Does it come up in your day-to-day lives? It actually does. That's amazing. Why don't we go in the back row there, and you can explain what you use them for.
Purely for tabular data, basically.
And what are the topics or the content that you have to mark up?
I can't think of an example, but, you know, so simple table of revenues, basically, so...
So that's you actually have the classical case of finance, right, which is just numbers.
Yeah.
Right? Same, because you're the same company, so that's the same, right? Other examples from people who have to use the data tables? How about over here?
Ours currently aren't marked up as tables, but there's an argument that our message boards, which have date, author, subject, are tabular data. In the sense of the original definition of tables.
They could. I suppose they could, yes. And then there's the big text area where they type in.
And the fact that you can sort that tabular data by date, by author, by alphabetically.
Do you have to go through a separate form to sort those, or do you just click on the word and it sorts?
It just click on it. Hmm. They're not marked up as tables at the moment, but I was wondering what you thought about whether they should be.
Is that on a live site that you can show us?
You could go to mtv.es/foros, foros, I think.
foros.
I think so.
Not 2 R's? Is it foros or foros? Can't believe I did that on command. Does it want W's? No? No, we just sit there and wait. Anyway. Oh, well, if it's an MTV forum, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Look at foros, forums, of course. Does anyone here speak Spanish? Formidable. Right. Now, what do I look at? Oh, of course, these are the names of forums, of course. Silly me.
So this is a list of all the forums, and as you drill down, you'll get into one, I guess, with authors and dates.
That's clearly a table.
There we go.
That was indisputably a table, by the way.
So this isn't marked up as a table. I think maybe it should be.
So here we have... date, subject, author, and number of responses. Oh, yes. If it's an overview of the available topics in a discussion forum, that's clearly a table. That's indisputably a table. I was drawing a blank there because I was imagining that on the form you used to actually respond, you had the sort of markup that might be a table. I was just trying to...
This is just an example where we maybe went too far with our table freeness. This is one of the first sites that... we asked the agency to produce CSS. This was probably just over 2 years ago.
Are you saying you're using CSS to mark this up?
This should all be CSS. And when it was built, it was valid. It may not be valid now because it's out of my hands.
Let's have a look.
This is where we get embarrassed.
We've all done worse things. Let's see here.
With MTV, we commission a lot of different agencies to do designs, so we publish guidelines and hope that they can mostly stick to them.
Weird bug. Only Home has this HR. Yeah, I love that. Isn't that awful? What was the photos? Venice, Red Passion Party. All right, hold on here. Pierre O'Hoel. So we have a wee bit of... oh, yes, divs. Yes, divs. Divagogo. Well, the difficulty is navigating in that, I would say. Your typical blind or visually impaired youth has an interest in music, and I assure you that even down in Spain, they're watching MTV. It would be interesting for them to be able to use the site adequately. It's actually quite fun watching the blind kids or the deaf kids going to rock concerts. This is actually quite a fun thing. If you ever get a chance, like, go with them, right? Here, this would be an argument for accessible tables, because then after having watched MTV and seen whatever they could of the music video, they could actually talk on an equal basis with the other fans in Spain, right? And then on the internet, no one needs to know you're blind. And it would be good that way. So I accept what you're saying. Back in the day, you might have sort of misread this thing, don't use tables, as meaning don't use tables, but that's fine. We're better now. If you ever get a chance to recode that, you know what to do. And since you already have it set up, your template set up to put things in divs, it'll be quite simple to put things in TR or THTD, right? There's someone else who had a real-life version of data tables. Who was that? Over here?
Yeah, we use it for our billing information on for our phone calls.
Oh, yeah.
We have a breakdown of your account, duration, date, like that. There's a hell of a lot of tables we use.
And that's non-controversially a table. You don't even have to be discussing whether that's a table or not. All right, so let's just stay with our group here. How hard have you found it? How hard have you found it to use correct table markup? Has that been difficult for you? No, you're all saying, I'll just shaking your heads. No, no problem. Andy?
Using correct markup isn't difficult, but actually knowing which markup works on assistive devices is.
Why don't we skip to that then, since you all know how to do it. I'll give you my quickie advice, though. I think it's useful to use T-head to mark up the header of a table. In this case that we're looking at here, bumping the fonts doesn't work so well. That would work better with tables, with the bumped fonts, by the way. In any event... this part here with the table headings is actually table head, T-head, right? I find this to be actually a useful thing to always put into a table if your system can produce it. A lot of systems can't. Your big content manager systems can never do this. Even it's difficult even in Dreamweaver and products like that. If you have the capacity to hand code things, I would prefer to put it in. Apart from the fact that it's structurally correct and... to my knowledge, all the current screen reader versions on Windows understand T-head, and they know that things are in headers. To my knowledge, they certainly understand TH. But the better part is, it's so much easier to style. You can apply CSS so much more readily to things, because then you just have to say, you know, T-head TH, and then whatever styles you want, and then only those four or five cells get the style. It's an easy thing to do. Poorly known inside the spec is that if you have just a bunch of data cells, let's imagine there are no headers to make this an uncomplicated discussion, just data. So if you only had these, authors, subjects, dates, and so on, that is technically a T-body. A T-body is always implicit in a table if you don't put it in. The problem is if you use one of the other structural features like T-head or T-foot, which is completely useless, the spec requires you to then explicitly put a T-body in. So if you want to follow my advice and put T-head, you have to then put T-body around the body of your table. The good thing is, if you're doing, for example, billing of phone calls, and you have it broken up into local, national, and international, that's three different T-bodies if you want. It could be T-body for local, and T-body for national, and T-body for international. Your system may not be able to output that, or you may be able to hack your template so it does. It's a useful thing. So just keep that in mind. If you're going to use T-head, you have to put in explicit T-bodies. Now, how do you get the headers to work with screen readers? We have, sadly, conflicting research on this. A guy named Stephen Ferg, F-E-R-G, ferg.org, F-E-R-G.org, works for the feds in the U.S. and has to, pages have to comply with 508, which has essentially the same data table requirements as WCAG. He has the most extensive, he's the most extensive analysis of the HTML table elements and attributes, accessible HTML tables. Yeah. Stephen Ferg, ferg.org. And when I mean extensive, like this is the table of contents. Ding, 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 ding. Is there any use for access today? Indented tables, call groups, scope, footnotes, rules. Okay, so you can print that out and, you know, take that home and read it on the weekend, you know, light reading for Saturday night kind of thing, right? And his advice is that ID headers and access, headers equals, double quote, that attribute, not the concept of headers, are for future technologies. The only one that really works very well is scope. The problem is, because of poor explanation in the spec, people don't understand that if you have what he calls a complex table, that is, one header cell encompasses more than one column or row, right? So, for example, phone calls, local, national, international, and phone calls is one cell and has scope over those three others, then you have to start using things we're all familiar with and use every day in HTML, call group and row group, which are so poorly documented that almost the only place you can learn about them is my book and Stephen Ferg's site. So if you have these complex tables, and oddly enough, I have one of them myself on my site, which by luck I did correctly. I'll tell you why it was lucky in a minute. Yeah, this is a table of all the captioned and or described movies I went to see. This the first two columns are just title and narrator, which is just are uncomplicated, and the last column is just a normal column, which is uncomplicated. It's the middle two that are a problem because caption and description, error dubious, we have these have this a single header cell that has scope over two other header cells, which then have scope over those respective columns. And in fact, to do this correctly, which by luck I did, each one of these, you have to use call groups for this entire table. So the title is itself a call group, the narrator is itself a call group. The CC is a call group of span equals two, because it encompasses two columns. DX is a call group, span equals two, because it encompasses two columns. And the last one is its own call group. And you have to put all that in right at the top of your table HTML for it to work properly. And then it gets better. For all of these cells, except these two here, which I'll get to in a sec, you have to use scope equals call group. And according to Ferg's testing, that if you do that, it reads fine in even this old version of JAWS he was using. He didn't test the other ones. There's an ambiguity, though. What about these second-level headers? There's ambiguous information whether that should just be scope equals call for the column or scope equals call group. And I don't know, because I don't know of anyone who's done a proper test. So that's Ferg's data. Oh, interesting story about this one. Did another one-day seminar for the same financial company that had the tables and frames site that had the footer on it, just on two columns. And we had to talk about this. And I couldn't reproduce the table HTML live on the spot. I couldn't get it right. However, the inevitably 20-year-old in the audience, 20-year-old woman in the audience, knew exactly what I was doing wrong and on request came up and fixed my stuff for me. So what I learned from that presentation is when things go wrong, just get the audience involved. Maybe they can help you, right? So I'm not going to do the HTML all over again. But this one, I specifically made this as a learning example. I put in 28K of HTML, 28K of HTML. That's just a table markup. So if you want an example of what I think to be actually correct table markup, this is the one to look at. And all of that, as you can see here, this is just one row, right? Table row, table heading with an abbreviation, scope equals row, an alignment character which doesn't work, character offset which doesn't work, this sort of thing. Have a look at that. It'll be in the notes. Gets better, of course, because some of the data cells are call spans, and they span those two things. So if someone wants to do a screen reader test of, say, just the first three rows of this table, please publish it, and we'll link to it, then we'll know a bit more. All right, so that's the FERG case and the concept of scope and call group. Then we have the other research by Roger Hudson down at usability.com.au. I met him down in Australia. He says he can't get anything but scope equals row and scope equals call to work in existing screen readers. He can't get any of the other stuff to work, even in the most advanced table reading mode, which, by the way, can involve four fingers on the keyboard, three modifier keys, and then one more to actually read the cell. And you have to remember that, eh? Because, you know, you're blind and you can't just look off the side to look at the cheat sheet. Hence, this becomes a question of adhering to the spec versus actually getting the job done. If I had to err on the side of caution, I would go with FERG's advice to just use scope in this elaborate and difficult way for nested table headers. And so it sounds, though, that the kind of data tables that the audience is confronted with are not complicated ones. It's just one row of headers, right? Which is easy to do. It's just, you know, TR and TH. If that's all your system can put out, that's fine. You're all familiar with TR, TH, TD. These are familiar concepts to you. Yeah, just live with that and see what happens. If you want, on a simple table, you can certainly put, TH scope equals call. You can. It certainly won't hurt. It's also an easy thing to do. Even in a template, it's an easy thing to do. But because most tables on the web are not data tables, and the small number of data tables there are poorly made, the adaptive technology manufacturers have had to hack their products to assume things. So they assume if there's a TH, it just has immediate application to the column. So putting it in there is helpful, but they've already reverse engineered the table reading for you. Oh, there's another edge case which will eventually come up, especially if you're dealing with finances, where an item is simultaneously data and heading. Years can be like this, years of financial reporting, especially if they skip one. Right? If there's a missing year or something, then suddenly it's not just a predictable linear sequence of 2005, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, 1999, and so on. If they skip one, all of a sudden, each of those things becomes a data item as well as a header for the row. Unfortunately, the spec requires you to use TD if a cell is simultaneously data and a header. But you can still put all these scope things on them in some cases that I don't perfectly understand even this many years later. The moral of the story on tables is you have to follow the spec to the extent your system is capable of, and keeping in mind that FERG's research shows that the exceptionally complicated table attributes and elements like ID and headers equals double quote cannot be used by any existing technology and become too unwieldy for complex tables in the first place. Is that possibly more than you wanted to know, and does that actually not answer any of the questions you had? I don't know. I'm going to take a swig of water. If you have any other questions, if I didn't actually get what you need, please let me know. And there was a sound of thunder in the room. Oh, Jeremy.
This is going to sound very anecdotal because I don't have a URL to hand, but just last month, a bunch of bloggers linking to somebody who had done research on all the possible things you can do, scopes, headers, all that, and the conclusion was the exact opposite, that IDs and headers are the kind of things that will work, and that scope just doesn't seem to be supported.
Was that also from Australia? Was that still Roger Hudson?
That's the thing. It's all very... Do you remember?
Can someone jot that down and send that along to me? I'm going to triple check on that, because it would even be useful just for us as developers to have a list of links of all the existing research on that, even if it's contradictory. And if it turns out you and I are both actually talking about the same thing, and I'm full of bollocks, and in fact the conclusion was that, not as I just reported it to you, then I'll correct that on the slides.
I know Richard Rudder posted an article about that on his site, so maybe in the break, if we look at Richard's site, we could look
that up. Yeah, Patrick.
So yeah, I just looked at usability.com, and looking at the conclusion, yeah, it says that its ID and headers are the most effective
there
ways
you
to
go.
Make complex tables.
Okay, so I've just finished face planting before your very eyes. Okay, so Roger Hudson's advice is in fact ID and headers and not scope. All right. Nonetheless, that actually reinforces the point that we don't know exactly what's going on. So this, I guess, I will commit to the group to get Bob Easton, works for IBM, who has all the toys, to go and do a proper test. He already has a set of test files on his site, but he hasn't come up with a conclusion. So I'm going to make him come up with a conclusion. And I'm also going to make him use my test files, this one and another one, which I can show you privately if you want, which has complex headers in both directions and some cells with call span and row span. And it's all words and a couple of numbers, which is an unusual set of data. So we can try it on that, and then we'll have better results. So actually one of the outcomes of this session will be in a couple of weeks, hopefully, there'll be this list of the citations of the conflicting research and some more research that will, we hope, confirm one of the existing sets of research, right? We'll have two votes for one topic and one for another. It is a bit tricky, isn't it? But take solace in the fact that, as I mentioned before, the kinds of tables that you're dealing with in this room are not these nightmare tables. And in fact, if you ever have to come up with something like this, even Stephen Ferg's advice is break it into two tables. Instead of trying to put all that much information in at once, then break it up. If any of you read the article on Accessible PDF I wrote for Zeldman on A List Apart, it has tables in it listing the HTML support on the various screen reader versions. That was initially one table. And you, so big, it takes three pages to print out, right? Even with smaller fonts. So we broke that up. Even I have a tendency to use the too complicated tables. Whenever possible, simplify. Is that enough for tables for now? We can come back to them in the Q&A if you want. Now, my next topic is actually forms. And since this is one of my weaknesses, I'm going to kind of, you know, zip through that just before lunch. Remember when I mentioned before that all the things that are deficient on my sites is because I don't know how to do them? Well, one of the things I don't know how to do is forms. Because I have almost, in my own experience of just writing little essays on different topics and putting a few pictures up, I've had almost no call to have to use forms. But how many people in this room are not familiar with standard HTML semantic and accessible markup, like, you know, label and legend and field set and opt group and so on? For how many people is that new? So that rings a bell to a lot of you. You know about, you know, labels for form elements, you know about legends, you know you can group, pull down menus into opt groups and so on. This is all reasonably well-trod territory for you, right? How many of you are prevented from doing that by some system that you can't control? Probably you. Is anyone else having trouble actually using the semantic and accessible form markup? Andy's having trouble? Must be really bad. Let's have a look.
It's to do with using labels. Say you've got two radio buttons.
Oh, that was the next point.
Shall I not?
You can't.
On.
You can't. Okay. There's no way in HTML to do that correctly. You're right.
Exactly. I was just wondering what sort of the common device was, and what I've been doing at the moment is by using form groups or headings as the main label for a group of widgets, radio boxes.
Oh, that's complex.
Yes.
Yeah, you can do that. Well, according to Jim Thatcher, formerly of IBM, who's there at the birth of IBM Homepage Reader's English version. Low those many decades ago now. He says the only way to compensate for that deficiency in the HTML spec is to put title on everything. So to take it from the top, what we're discussing here, let's imagine you're doing a user satisfaction form on your website. how well have we served you today? And you give them a bunch of questions, you know, this website gave me the information I wanted, you know. Agree strongly, agree somewhat, no opinion, disagree somewhat, disagree strongly. And each one of those is a radio button, and you, the user, have to figure out a way to just click that and carry on, right? First of all, if you're mobility impaired, or dexterity impaired, I should say, and you're using a switch access or something, it's actually very tedious to get onto those things. So it's better to use some other method, like typing a number in, 1 to 5, right? But if that's the system you got, because that's all your back-end database can handle, there is no way to put in HTML, put a label on each one of those, because they didn't think about that when they were putting the spec together. One of the many little things they didn't think about. Obviously, when writing CERN physics research papers, who would want to do this sort of thing? That's clearly the kind of commercial thing that they didn't want in HTML. Nonetheless, this is what we've got. And according to Jim Thatcher's testing, the way to do it is to put a title on everything, because JAWS and Window Eyes in their forms mode, which is a bizarre concept, why should you have to go into a mode to read forms, read titles out on form elements, because that's been a hack that people have had to develop on their inaccessible forms. So I go one level beyond that. Now, for safety, I put a title on everything, every single thing, and every bit of the form has a title. Sometimes it might just duplicate the exact text. Sometimes if there's more, it needs more explanation, you can put that in. There was another research paper, not from IBM, about on that same topic, and they mentioned that in their own system of using their really bad content management system to publish their website, they hacked it to put the full screen text of the element in plus an explanation on each one of their form elements. They don't have usability results to show that this actually works, but I have actually sat there with blind users and watched them go through forms, and if they're well marked up, with or without this title thing, they work adequately well. Forms are such a complex thing in HTML. They're quite complicated as far as this simple markup language goes, and they were so badly done for many years that the adaptive technologies have had to hack their way around that. But avoid it whenever possible. If there's this complicated thing, the answer is just to avoid it, right? So if you're doing a user satisfaction survey, let them just type in numbers, like 0 to 6 or something, 0 to 7, whatever the number would be. It's just easier. Another less bad option is a pull-down menu with the correct markup. You know, very satisfied, dissatisfied, just pull it down that way. That could be easily manipulated by keyboard. If you're using Windows, by the way, and you're trying to simulate these sorts of things with one finger, seeing how someone who's a quadriplegic or something would use your site, keep in mind that when you get on something that needs to be pulled down, the correct keystroke is Alt down arrow and not just down arrow. People don't know this, right? The people with the disabilities do, but non-disabled people don't on Windows. If you do Alt down arrow, even just on ordinary things, in anything in Windows, like ordinary software in Windows, it pops up the whole thing, and then you can use the arrow key to select something, and then you press Enter to actuate it, right? So when people complain that, for example, forms that don't have a Go button, forms that automatically take you somewhere as soon as you go over them, actually, like the S5 concept here, I can move to a slide just by selecting it, and it goes automatically, right? People complain that they can't use those by keyboard because when they try to use the down arrow, it selects every one of them in turn. Well, that's because you're using the wrong keystroke. If you Alt down arrowed on them, then you wouldn't have that problem. That's still not an excuse for not using a Go button and not doing things correctly. It's just that people don't know how to use this on Windows. On Macintosh, there's no built-in system-wide way to do that. Even if you turn the keyboard navigation on, they haven't completed that yet. I don't know about Linux. Question from Patrick.
Yeah, just on what Andy was saying about what you were discussing about the multiple radio buttons. I don't quite get what the problem is. Why can't you use labels and maybe kind of hide them off screen, or I think even display none of them because they still get them.
You can't do it in valid HTML. You can do it in invalid HTML. Go because label 4 equals, or label has to surround the item. And because of the nesting rules of block and inline elements, it doesn't work. It does check the spec. It doesn't work, and I've given up trying to understand why, because I get confused on this. But Mike has, I think Mike might be able to explain this better than I can. Hope someone can.
Yeah, back to your user satisfaction thing. Couldn't you do that with a field set legended and then labels with their form elements? Because that way you've got a wrapper heading, wrapper heading for the group of elements, followed by labels for each specific element.
I think so, but I haven't seen that. I've seen someone try to do that same multiple choice thing with a definition list, and they claim to have gotten it to work. This is not something that HTML does well. Multiple, a bunch of little buttons to pick one is something that HTML doesn't do well. So we have to figure out another way. I know for a fact you can't do it in valid code. I'm sadly blanking on the reason why. Let's check the HTML spec over lunch.
I've got one that's probably simpler than what you had in mind, but that uses field set, unordered list, and list items with labels.
Can you put that on your site and then link me to it? And we can.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah.
So we're going to link to Mike's sample code afterward.
I was just going to say that's the approach I take is field sets and legends around multiple select box or multiple radio buttons. The problem is browser support. I find lots of problems with Opera dealing with legends and field sets. And Netscape 6 and 7 have some very odd quirks, especially when you're floating them. So unfortunately, I've ended up using headlines instead for sites that need sort of better cross-browser support. But the thing I was going to ask, because I'm not massively familiar with the forms mode in screen reader or assistive devices, would I be correct in assuming that if I have a H1 or a H2 within a form, it will be ignored in forms mode? Or
no,
is
it's red. No,
it's red.
They're definitely red.
Okay.
The problem is surrounding text often disappears completely.
Mm. I was just wondering whether a headline would be considered as surrounding text.
Well, the usability issue in that same paper I just mentioned where they use their CMS to replicate the screen text with a bit of explanation text on every single thing was that they found that if there was a little field, a little bit of text explaining how to type your credit card number in, like, don't use number spaces, hyphens, this sort of thing. You would tab right over it in your screen reader, right? The advantage of using a headline is the headings are, they always spot headings, right? Live text in a paragraph or just floating by itself, which doesn't have to be marked up in anything in some cases, is often missed completely. And the guy has a method to fix that, and I have a possible hack for that. But that's an indication that your form is too complex. Mm. You're actually putting too much in one little field, right? First of all, I shouldn't need any advice on how to type my credit card number in. Your system should let me type anything I want. Same with phone numbers and postcodes, especially the Canadian postcodes, which are really complicated. I shouldn't need advice. Your system should fix it for me.
But, I mean, often it's used with error messages, isn't it? So you miss an important required form element, and developers will, print next to the form field, not inside a label, but maybe inside the paragraph, in red with an asterisk, you need to fill this in.
Right.
But obviously in forms mode,
You'd miss the normal text in most cases. So what this same author does, and we'll link you to that, it's in the IBM Systems Journal that just came out. They put a summary up at the top using anchor elements to link you right to the things that are wrong in the form. Here's a summary of things that are wrong in your form. You missed this, link to it. You missed this, link to it, right? And that they claim that works better, but I don't have any user testing on that.
Thank you.
And that's all I know about forms for now, and possibly all I'll ever know about forms, unless someone wants to teach me JavaScript and so on, which I probably won't understand either. God knows I've tried. That's why we have other experts, right, like Jeremy. So with that, we're probably going to go to lunch, are we not?